Extra time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. This week, hosted by me, Henry Hill, and I'm thrilled to be joined by my main man, Sam Obaseki, and Doogie Critchley. Sam, how are you doing, my friends?
I'm very good. I just want to know who your main man is, because I saw Doogie with
him. He's not really sure. I was guessing that other got the shout first.
I actually
this is the way to start a podcast, Henry. Offend your guests.
I actually panicked and wasn't sure what to say.
Just be honest, Henry, it's all right. We've got a different type of relationship.
Listen, you
know? I see that. Obviously, main man, okay.
No, there's no hierarchy. Doogie, I've always said it. You've been my my confidant this whole journey through. The person I've worked with the most. All right. Sam, it's nice to see you as well. Doogie, I'll go to my original main man first. Are you okay? Sure. I'm sorry to have insulted you.
Yeah, no, I'm fine, thank you. I enjoyed the Prem being back last night. That was really exciting. It's been quite a while after the sort of winter break, and it was a nice distraction because Sunderland lost their third game in a row to Cheltenham.
Swear down. You lot are going for a madness.
Season is collapsing. Yeah. We need to get a manager in ASAP. Apparently it's going to be Roy Keane, but get him in the door. But yeah, nice distraction with the Premier League last night. So no, I'm all good. Thanks, Henry.
Just a quick word on that. I mean, do you really think that Roy Keane's combative style is that what they need, or are you running out of ideas when it comes to Sunderland?
I don't think it's what we need. No, I mean, he hasn't been in management for what, 11 years? I think it might be even longer. And he really struggles to remain calm watching Premier League players. What is he going to be like in League One? I think it's a massive risk. I would have kept Lee Johnson. Yeah, we've gone from first on New Year's Day to fourth now, but yeah, teams behind us have massive games in hand as well. We just need to get in the playoffs at this current rate, because automatic looks way out of reach. So it's a really disappointing time to be a Sunderland fan.
Oh, sorry, Dukes.
Thanks, guys.
Sorry, Dukes. Sam, I'll come to you, because we're all repping the blue of Chelsea today. Obviously, you're spending more of your time over at the Bridge. How are you? How's that going?
Yeah, it's all good, man. I'm enjoying it. Obviously, over there, I can be as biased as I want without getting any abuse. Even though, you know, guys, do you honestly think, like, this is a real question, yeah? Dudes, we've had a few conversations about football in general. Do you think that I'm an extreme, but I'm extremely biased? Like, extreme?
I don't think you're extremely biased, but you do support your club really strongly, which isn't it's not a bad thing necessarily. I don't think you're extremely biased. I think you can criticise certain players, and you do get pretty annoyed when they don't perform well. So no, I wouldn't say extremely biased, but yeah, a big Chelsea fan.
Thank you very much. You've heard it from Doogs, everyone. Yeah. So all of you that try and say that there's a Jorginho agenda and all of that stuff, just leave me alone. But apart from that, I'm all good. I'm excited to see what we do in the Club World Cup. We actually haven't won that competition yet as well, so I'm hoping that we can win it. I'm kind of nervous the fact that Tuchel's not over there, because, you know, it's always just better to have your manager on the sideline. But I believe that we should win it.
Well, it looks like this 15-year-old at Palmeiras is gonna tear you apart. So,
I was reading about him.
Just on the subject of trolls, I'm not gonna say who it was, but the person who messaged me the other day to say I was only on the channel for my looks and I was a complete airhead and knew nothing. If you thought that was a troll, that was I loved every moment of that. Do you know what I mean?
Take that as a compliment. Yeah.
Did they really say that?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So yeah, I just you know, keep those kind of criticism coming. I'm happy for that. however,
only on for your looks. What is going on here?
I know.
What is actually going on?
As if
on?
Football Daily ever prioritised such a thing. Look at us all. Anyway,
clearly didn't. Yet.
Anyway, let's crack on with the pod. We're just gonna take a bit of a look at some of the bigger stories of the week and react to some of the games that took place in the Premier League, because as Doogie mentioned, the Premier League did return on Tuesday night. A selection of interesting games, it has to be said. We'll kick off with Burnley versus United, which was a big game, really, in the context of both ends of the table. Burnley obviously stuck at the bottom with two games in hand on the other teams in the bottom four, and United sort of chasing down those Champions League positions. It finished 1-1. Sam, I know you tuned into this game. What did you take from it?
What I've been seeing from United in the last few games that they've been under Ragnick, they start a game very well. The first 45 minutes, you can see the style of play that he's trying to implement. You can see them defending better, the midfielders trying to control the game. And then it's like, as soon as half-time, they come out of from half-time, I don't know what happens, but everything just changes, like, completely. And they just lose control of the game. They start making this rash decisions in, like, crucial areas. I think they should have clearly won that game. They kind of did get bumped by VAR with the second goal that was disallowed from... I can't remember who scored it, actually.
The own goal.
The own goal. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't have been disallowed. I think that was quite harsh. But aside from that, like, they had more shots on goal. They dominated possession as well, but it just seems that those moments where you expect, like, your big players, for example, Harry Maguire, he just shouldn't be diving in the way he dived in. It's very strange to see a defender with such experience, your captain as well, dive in on a player that he's not going to turn you and, like, beat you for pace. Do you know what I mean? So the way it kind of happened, and McTominay, the angle he was coming at, Maguire had no reason to dive in. And it's those moments there where you kind of realise that they've always got that moment in them. It's not necessarily what Ragnick is doing, because you've seen what he's trying to implement. He's made big calls. He's benched Ronaldo. He's started different formations. He put Pogba straight back into the squad, and that worked out for him. But it's just those little moments that it's the United way right now. And I don't know how they're going to get out of it. I don't know whether it's down to them training too hard or going too hard in the first 45 minutes. Like, it's when you see, like I said, when you see them in the first half and the second half, it's just two completely different teams.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, just Dukes, just on Sancho, because there's a lot of chat in the Football Daily WhatsApp group that, you know, Joe thinks Sancho's looking like he's going to have a big second half to the season. Do you think this is his moment now? Competition's gone a little bit, there's going to be a lot more weight on his shoulders. I think he had quite an impressive game yesterday. Do you think this is kind of the time we're going to see Sancho really maybe start to fulfil at least half the potential we thought when he signed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sort of has to be. I mean, prior to yesterday, was it 3 goals and 0 assists in about 24 games? So not the sort of output we were looking for and expecting on arrive from Dortmund, where his productivity was absolutely insane. I mean, he had a slow start to last year and then really exploded in the second half of the season. But yeah, yesterday looked sharper than usual. Some really nice turns, some nice nutmegs, looked full of confidence. And Ragnick's been saying that he's been excellent in training. He just hasn't taken it onto the pitch just yet. But there was a few players that I thought looked their best for ages yesterday. I thought Luke Shaw in the first half was excellent, full of energy. Rashford was playing a lot better than normal as well. Bruno Fernandes' sort of chemistry with the rest of his teammates looked back on point. It's just a shame, as Obba said, that they sort of Not so much switched off, but yeah, just moments in the second half, they just sort of lost a grip of the game. And Harry Maguire's form is really troubling now. If I was Ragnick, I'd take him out of the firing line for a little bit, because I just think it's actually damaging the team right now. And going from one of the best centre-backs, if not the best centre-backs in the Euros during the summer, where he was absolutely insane. And last year for Man United, I thought he was really, really good as well, to his form right now, where his awareness, his positional sense, just everything looks really far off. And even his, you know, the basic things that Harry Maguire's always been so good at, taking the ball out of defence, you know, line splitting passes, aren't quite there yet either. So I just drop him for a few games, and Lindelof alongside Varane or Bailly or even Phil Jones, who was excellent in that game against Wolves that he played before Christmas as well. Maybe give them a go, because I know he's your captain, but right now he's just so far out of form that it's really damaging the side.
I'm actually gutted for him, because I feel as if he's... That price tag that he arrived has always given him an unfair level of criticism. We've seen people like Van der Vaart.
He's a massive scapegoat.
Yeah, Van der Vaart, people like that, the pundits just almost laughing at him at times. And I've always thought that, you know, like you mentioned it, for England, he's been such a rock over the last few years, while perhaps the other centre-half position has juggled between a few of the other players. And it is quite sad to see him at this point. And yeah, I completely agree with you. Maybe just give him a bit of a respite, give him a chance to sort of gather his thoughts again and then go again, because he is, I completely agree with you. I think he's a brilliant player. on his day. But I mean,
it's a lot of pressure, though. It's a lot, like, and that's the thing. Like in those moments, like he understood when he came to Manchester United that you're coming to the biggest, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and the price tag. Yeah, we can have conversation about how much he's worth and how much they should have bought him for. But at the same time, like he was bought for a reason. The reason being, he was a good centre back, playing out from the back. He was dominant in the air. He was reliable as well. And I think he's just lost those fundamentals that the main reasons why they bought him, and it's quite interesting to see like him come out and speak in interviews. I remember when there was a few games where they had a bad run of form, and he came out and he said something along the lines that he didn't want to speak to the media, but he has to anyway. Yeah. And it's just his energy just doesn't seem right. Like I know Roy Keane got onto him and said that like you've got to like really be on it. Do you know what I mean? And obviously there's obviously United older legends that are gonna be saying, "Oh, the United way and all of this stuff." But even as a professional in yourself, like, I'm not a professional, so I can't. I don't know what it's like here, but I can kind of see that when things aren't going against you, like, you should stick to what you're good at. Like, you should, you know, almost like roll your sleeves up and say, you know what, we got to get at it. And I feel he goes the opposite direction. Like, he just doesn't seem confident. So yeah, I agree with dudes. I think he needs to be benched for a few games. That might not help his confidence, but at the same time, he needs to get out the limelight. Yeah.
What was, I thought, really interesting yesterday was, you know, for the Varane goal as well. Basically, I was like, suddenly when I watched it back, I was like, why did Maguire go so early and end up offside? And he basically fell for Rashford's dummy on the free kick. Just like, it was so unnecessary to be offside and then to block Jay Rodriguez, who I don't think was going to stop Varane anyway.
Yeah.
It was just really like boneheaded. So I just found that just summed up his evening and summed up his season, basically. He's just not been on it.
Yeah, completely agree. Sam, I'm going to hold you to account for that. I'm not a professional line. After all the nonsense,
I didn't mean it in that way.
FC under the radar, in your face FC that we get from you on social media. to hear that.
I didn't mean it in that way. I meant like, you know, I'm not a professional by trade, but you know, if you see by, I don't know what I'm saying.
By mentality, but, is.
Yeah, by mentality. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Self-proclaimed biggest baller at Football Daily, it has to be said. But no, listen, just one last thing on the game, Sam. About Weghorst, I think, what did you make of him? Because obviously we've been getting quite excited about him. Was he any good?
I really enjoyed his performance. I think he grew into the game. I think the first few minutes, in the first half, he wasn't really having that much joy. The defenders were doing quite well at closing him down and getting in his face. But I think he grew into it. He didn't stop running. I think Joe summed him up perfectly before he came to Burnley, that he's a workhorse and he's just going to keep on working for the team, whether he's tired or not. And you definitely saw that yesterday. He had an opportunity to score as well. I think he's going to be really good for Burnley. I think he kind of sums up the type of striker Sean Dyche wants. He keeps on working. He's just dogged. And he can actually, his footwork isn't bad. Like the assist for the goal, the turn that he did. Yeah, we can say Maguire shouldn't have dived in, but that was a good turn for a guy that's 6'6". And his turn of pace as well was actually quite good as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he faces off against teams in the lower ends of the league. But yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, I was filming Sunday Vibes when Joe coins Wout workhorse, and you could see the satisfaction on his face then. It was quite painful actually to watch him get away with that joke. But anyway, you're right, I think the relegation battle was going to be fascinating this season. Burnley only won one match all year, lost as many as West Ham, who are in eighth, which I just find quite bizarre. But if we look at one of the other games which maybe will have a big impact on that relegation battle, that was Newcastle versus Everton last night. Dukes, massive win for Newcastle.
Yeah, crucial. And they are starting to get their season going. Is that two wins on the bounce now? I think they beat Leeds and then went on that break to Saudi Arabia, which was much talked about. I mean, I won't get into the politics of that, but obviously they came back a bit energised, and this was a really good performance against Everton, to be honest. I thought it was a sort of classic Premier League game in that it was kind of defined by sort of scrappy moments and mistakes. But with a lot of like passion and energy, which just sums up the Premier League perfectly, I feel. But yeah, there was, you know, scrappy own goal from Jamal Lascelles, but then to go up the other end and a magnificent header, which then hit the bar and then went in off Holgate, etc. Great response from him, because he's been heavily criticised this year. And you probably thought that, you know, with numerous centre-backs being targeted by Newcastle and them supposedly targeting two centre-backs in January, I know they only got Dan Burn in the end, that Jamal Lascelles' place in that starting 11, despite being captain, was under threat. I saw Eddie Howe say afterwards that he's now going to share leadership a bit more around the team, and Kieran Trippier has taken on a big role within the side as well, which is what you want to see from a really experienced England international, won La Liga with Atletico Madrid, etc. And his free kick to seal the win was wonderful. Against his England colleague, Jordan Pickford, who was fuming all night. I love it when Pickford gets angry. He just gets so frustrated with his teammates after every single mistake.
It's like he can't play without being angry.
No, exactly. Exactly. And he did it at Sunderland. He's carried it on at Everton. I'm surprised they don't tell him just to shut up after a while. but yeah, it was a great win for Newcastle, as much as it pains me to say it for as a Sunderland fan. But yeah, they've started to get their season going. And I think it sort of started in sort of December time, was it, when they put in a really good performance against Man City and lost quite heavily, and then a really good performance against Man United. And fair play to Eddie Howe, because I think he's done, well, we'll see what it's like in the next few weeks, but he's definitely improved the side. And with these new signings coming in, I think things could start to be quite positive for Newcastle. I think they're only 6 points off 10th as we record this. Not suggesting they're going to finish in mid-table, but yeah, things are definitely looking up.
Yeah, just a quick note on Pickford. You're so right. It's like he doesn't expect to have to make a save every match. It's as if like he doesn't think that's his job. I mean, it is... Yeah.
It's when he kicks the post for me as well. He always kicks
every
the post.
Every time. It's like, bro, is your foot not that you do it a lot.
Yeah, no, I agree. Listen, let's just talk about Kieran Trippier. Because, Sam, we once had a big argument on this podcast about him versus Reece James. And I won because Trippier went to the World Cup and played the Euros and played a big part. And he's been unreal for Newcastle so far. If we look at his like numbers alone, he's currently averaging in the three games, so it's obviously not a small sort of portion size to pick from, but he's averaging 8.3 tackles and interceptions so far. He's completing over two key passes, and he arguably got a goal and an assist in that game, if you sort of count the own goal as an assist. I mean, that out of all the signings they made, How big of a deal do you reckon Trippier is? Because as Duke's just touched on, he's got those like leadership abilities. He's obviously taking on the responsibility of this survival battle. I mean, how impressed have you been with Trippier since he's come back?
I think, first of all, actually, we shouldn't have brought up the Reece James thing, because they're both quality right-backs. But you know what, yeah? In this case, I genuinely think Trippier is a quality right-back. And I think that... I remember we spoke about it. I can't remember if it was on a podcast or not, but we said that Trippier, as the first signing, is going to set them off so well. And you can see with the other signings that they made that it really did. He is the type of player that you'd want, that... He's not coming here to just like some for just for the paycheck or just to finish his career in England. He genuinely wants to still perform at the top levels. Still wants to be considered as one of the best right backs. I'm sure he still wants to have an opportunity to go to the World Cup with England as well. And he knows that he's going to have to perform. He's probably going to be up against the likes of Reece James and Trent, who are at teams that in the top six. So it's like, I think now, even with his goal, like, you saw the passion, like, when he slid and he was telling his team, like, come, like, let's celebrate, do you know what I mean? He gives me the vibe that he's in the dressing room and he's genuinely telling everyone, like, we're going to make it. You know those type of players? Like, I think Guimaraes is obviously, in terms of quality and in terms of, like, big signings, Guimaraes was probably that signing, but for the team and for the morale and for the leadership and and not just that, like the quality on the ball, like you said, the tackles, the interceptions, but also the key passes, the deliveries, the free kicks. He's a well-rounded right back, and I think he's going to be so good for them. Hopefully he can, like, he's not really injury prone anyway, but I think if he maintains his fitness, he's going to be a very key player for their last stretch.
Yeah, massive. So true about his delivery. I didn't realise, it just seems to get better and better, his free kicks and sort of crossing ability. But I mean, you touched on Bruno Guimaraes there. He said this week that Newcastle, they, as we all sort of assumed, they want to become a major force, win the Champions League once they survive this season. He reckons he's joined the boat at the right time. I mean, Doogie, a lot was obviously made about Newcastle in the winter window. But actually, I think widely, a lot of people are quite impressed with their first round of business under the circumstances. And considering kind of the setup they had at the club, Steve Nixon, who's head of recruitment, he really put in a shift this winter, didn't he? I mean, what do you make of their overall work in the winter market?
I think given that the takeover went through, was it late October? I mean, they didn't have that much time to prepare, They did, you know, didn't have a head of recruitment. They brought Steve Nixon in on sort of a consultancy basis. And given that, I think they can be really pretty chuffed with the work they did. I think it was pretty chaotic. I don't think they were necessarily planning to bring in the likes of Dan Byrne. I think he was quite far down their list. They were looking at Sven Botman, Diego Carlos. And maybe Dan Byrne's the one signing that you're like, maybe they could have got a slightly better centre-back. Mm. Maybe they slightly overpaid for Chris Wood as well, given his age. But given they needed to get a striker in at some stage, and at the time they weakened a relegation rival, looks like it's actually worked out for Burnley because they managed to pull off one of the deals of the window and getting Weghorst in for £12 million. But generally, I think it's a pretty solid business. Like, they've upgraded both their fullbacks, which they needed to do, and they've brought in a midfielder who wouldn't look out of place at a top six club. So credit to Newcastle.
Yeah, absolutely agree. What I thought, because they always say that when these kind of heavy cash rich owners come in, that the first sort of few waves of signings can always be a bit difficult. Obviously, it takes a long time to build the kind of squads that we see today. So I had a look at Chelsea and City, their first windows when got taken over. And I thought we could maybe sort of see if we could rank them 1 to 3 quickly. Because, I think Newcastle, under the circumstances, given their conditions, which were different to the way that City and Chelsea were bought, they were obviously safe at the time, is intriguing. So, Sam, I want to cast your mind back to 2003. You brought in, under Abramovich, you got in Glenn Johnson, Jeremy, Wayne Bridge, Damien Duff, Joe Cole, Veron, Mutu, Crespo and Claude Makélélé, among others, for £110 million. I mean, that is for 2003, that is a mad amount of money. That is a crazy amount of money. I mean, what do you... in terms of like legacies go amongst those signings, I actually think they're all pretty successful.
Yeah, same. I think as it goes, like you said, in terms of a first window when you get a big cash injection, I think that was quite reasonable. I think we filled areas in the pitch that we needed, the fullback area. We've got one of the best CDM or central midfielders to ever grace the game. He made his own position. Do you know what I mean? Joe Cole as well, Damien Duff. They were legends at the club. So I think, I think that was a quite successful win.
Yeah. All right. Dukes over at City. So they bought in Zabaleta and company before the takeover came over in 08-09, which is a shame because they were obviously two massive, massive players. But they did sign Robinho, Craig Bellamy, Wayne Bridge. Who knew that Wayne Bridge would be the kind of sort of...
Why didn't he go to Newcastle in January?
Clearly, if you're going to get taken over, bring in Wayne. That should be the first call. They also got in Nigel de Jong and Shea Given, which I love. Just absolutely love Shea Given. That was £82.5 million, their first big splurge. I mean, better or worse than Chelsea's? What would you say?
Worse, I'd probably say, actually. Looking at that, I mean, if Zabaleta and company don't really count because they were brought in before the takeover, obviously they are two of, you know, one of the best right-backs the Premier League's ever seen, one of the best centre-backs the Premier League's ever seen. But Robinho never really settled at Man City, thought he was going to Chelsea famously. Yeah. Craig Bellamy was pretty good for a couple of years, Wayne Bridge as well. Shea Given then got replaced by Joe Hart for that sort of the first sort of successful era of the Man City period. Nigel de Jong was a good signing, actually. Yeah. Was still a regular for the next sort of 3-4 years at Man City and helped take them to the next level. So I would probably go, easily Chelsea's, to be fair. I mean, you look at Damien Duff, Joe Cole, Makélélé, Wayne Bridge was also a good servant for Chelsea as well. Like, these turned out to be top players for Chelsea. The only slight shames with Chelsea was Veron, who never really settled in England at Man United or Chelsea, despite being an unbelievably good player. Smashed it at Lazio before that under Sven-Goran Eriksson. And Crespo as well, never really settled at Chelsea as well, which is a real shame.
I love Crespo, though.
Yeah, he was such a good player. But I think Chelsea definitely won the window, as it were. against City.
Yeah, I love Mutu as well until he obviously got banned. But I thought he was class at first.
Less said about that, the better.
completely agree. All right, Sam, how would you rate those three windows then? Newcastle.
I'd put Chelsea top. I would say it's difficult with the City and Newcastle because they were in different positions. Do you know what I mean? I genuinely think Newcastle, with what they had to play with, like Doogie said, they wasn't getting the rubber to green anywhere. Everyone was trying to bump them. As soon as Newcastle was involved with a player, they were saying, "Oh, we want to." If the player was 25 mil, they'll bump it up to 45. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That is not an easy thing to do in 30 days when you haven't really got that many senior people at the club at the time as well to make these decisions. They were really like freestyling. So to freestyle into getting Kieran Trippier, Chris Wood, Guimaraes, who was wanted by a few clubs in Europe as well. I think they are second. I think it's Chelsea, then Newcastle, and then City.
There we go. All right, let us know at home what your order is. I tend to agree with my colleagues on this one. I think Target as well. Good signing at left back. Really solid.
Yeah,
really solid upgrades on what they had there. And you kind of mentioned that freestyling nature where they had to go back the window. Amanda Staveley, I think, working incredibly hard as well. That looks like it's going to change down the line because one of the big stories this week is that Brighton's technical director, Dan Ashworth, has resigned because he's going to take on the role as the new director of football at Newcastle. They finally got their man. Although, the only thing is he has to go on gardening leave for a while, and it's kind of up to Brighton, due to his contract situation, it's up to Brighton to decide when that is lifted. So I don't think they'll be doing that until they get a successor in, and it sounds as if...
Imagine they put him for like a year-long gardening leave.
That would be so petty. I kind of rate it though if they did. But yeah, there's loads of mixed emotions there, which I'll touch on later. But Doogie, I actually didn't know a whole lot about Dan Ashworth until I read into him. But I think this is an unbelievable piece of business by Newcastle, which could, provided they stay up, have huge kind of ramifications going forward for the club.
Yeah, these behind-the-scenes executives, you never really get to know what they do on a day-to-day basis. But everything you hear about Dan Ashworth is really impressive. He was at West Brom, then he was at England. And yeah, really helped sort of set the culture that has taken England, you know, to new levels from the under-17 levels right up, etc. Throughout, up to Gareth Southgate's team as well. And then at Brighton, since he's been there for a couple of years... everyone knows how cleverly run Brighton have been. They've signed in really interesting places. They made that decision to sack Chris Hughton when a lot of people disagreed with it. Graham Potter came in and most people who didn't know about his work at Ostersunds were a bit sceptical about his arrival. They then gave him that enormous new contract about a couple of months into his reign, and it felt like, you know, is that a little bit risky? Is this another Alan Pardew situation? But Graham Potter's proven to be probably the best English manager in the Premier League. And I think Pep Guardiola even said that a couple of weeks ago as well, and is now linked with every top job that's going in the division whenever one becomes available. So Dan Ashworth, I think he is, a clever, astute signing from Newcastle. And it's, now we're saying he's got to go on gardening leave for a couple of months, but if he's in by April, he's still got plenty of time to prepare for the summer window, which if Newcastle stay up, I mean, it looks like they will now, then it's going to be a massive, massive summer ahead for him. But I'm sure he'll be doing a lot of work on the sides, just not in an official capacity. So this will be, I think this is a very astute signing from Newcastle, knows the league, knows the English system. And best of luck to him.
Absolutely. I mean, you touched on it there. Like he presided over the Baggies when I think they're probably in their best years. If you remember back to the Steve Clarke times of 2012.
That's when they were like eighth and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, there's some exciting players running through the squad. So a good side then. I think Tony Pulis had them for a little bit too. And then at England, he oversaw that kind of unbelievable year we had in 2017, where I believe we won the under-19 Euros, the under-17s World Cup, and the under-20s World Cup too. And he's considered, for people who don't know about Dan Ashworth, he's considered to be the guy who really implemented the attitudes and culture that we see in England today, which has propelled England further into these international competitions and brought back maybe that good spirit to our national team's football. And then at Brighton, even his scouting network that he's implemented is apparently the envy of most Premier League sides. You do tend to see them picking up bargains. Actually, in fairness, not all of their transfers really land. Some of them could be a bit suspect, but even getting in Kozlowski this window, one of the most sought-after Polish midfielders. We saw them bring in Sima from Slavia Prague last year. He's obviously been on loan, but I mean, these are all kind of... They are managing to pick up some of the gems of Europe, and that's kind of thanks to Dan Ashworth's work that he's done there, and also his work in establishing a pathway from the academy into Brighton's first team has been really successful so far. If you look at Robert Sanchez, the keeper, Steve Alzate and Ben White too, who they've managed to sell for an absolute premium, didn't they? So these are the things that Newcastle will be looking to do as they look to holistically become one of the clubs of the future. And I should also mention he did loads of great work with the women's team as well. I think it's really important to mention that alongside Hope Power, one of the former England coach. He's helped establish Brighton Women's as like a force in the Women's Super League. The entire time he's been there, they've managed to get promoted. So it's I think that's really important to state as well. So yeah, at Newcastle, Sam, do you think this... The job's going to be huge, isn't it? But from what you hear, does this the kind of guy that they need for the job?
Yeah, 100%. I think... like you said, the work he's done in terms of setting up cultures at different clubs and setting up a standard. I think Newcastle are going to need that moving forward because they don't want to, you know, we've seen at other clubs that have failed when they have got cash injections to, they haven't had someone in the senior leadership that knows how to, you know, really set up the type of energy and the type of direction they want the club to go in. And I think that Dan Ashworth is definitely the man for that role. But I think he's also got to kind of, we didn't mention it obviously during the game, but I think players like Saint-Maximin as well, I think he has to almost let them know how important they are for the future of the club, because I think we didn't speak about how good he was yesterday, but For Newcastle in the period that they've had, not just now, but even when they've been losing games, he's been such a star for them. He's been a man that doesn't give up. He's so loved by the fans and he's so adored by the fans as well. And I think players like that are key for a club to kind of set a type of precedent of, you know, we appreciate you to these type of players. We want to move forward with you, like the Kieran Trippiers as well. The even like Lascelles, he had a good game, and you could tell that with the pressure that's going on with other players coming in, you can tell he wants to really like cement his place in that team. He wants to move forward with them. So I think Dan will definitely, I say Dan like he's my boy, but I think he'll definitely have the role. Yeah. I think he'll have the role to, you know, kind of make them feel important, and also with the other players coming in, tell them the type of team and type of energy he wants in the squad.
No, I agree. It's like Saint-Maximin just loves, I think he just loves playing for Newcastle. I think he just seems to be,
he's just free.
Yeah, he was genuinely gutted when Steve Bruce was fired. Fair play to Steve Bruce, by the way, back of the game, the mighty West Brom. But yeah, Newcastle, they've managed to, over the years, pick up some great signings out of Ligue 1. We'll leave that for now. We'll see how Newcastle get on, and just quickly move to West Ham, who obviously got a sort of comfy victory over Watford last night, 1-0. Goal from Jared Bowen. However, I think the story this week is once again about Declan Rice. David Moyes looks sick of having to answer questions about Rice and his future and how much he says he's worth. The number he keeps saying is he's worth £100 million. Now, Dukes, that's all well and good. Do you think he's a £100 million player?
I'm doing a bit of a David Moyes pause here. I don't want him to move for £100 million. I just don't think anyone... No £100 million signings, they very rarely work. I think only Kylian Mbappe, you could probably say, is an out-and-out success for the fee that he's gone with for over £100 million. Declan Rice is as close to a £100 million midfielder that we've got in the Premier League right now, given his age, his injury record, the fact he's an England regular now, the fact he's starred in a major tournament... The fact he is the fulcrum of a side that is pushing for Champions League football, which wouldn't, I don't think, be anywhere close to Champions League football. You know, they'd still probably be top eight without him, but they wouldn't be in this position without Declan Rice. That's how crucial he's been to them this season. And he is performing well, not just for the Premier League standards, but for European standards as well. as we've seen with England. And I think only three players in Europe have carried the ball further than Declan Rice this year. Wow. His tackle and deception numbers are really good. His pass accuracy, I think, is the second best of Premier League midfielders after Rodri this year. Rodri also gets far more touches on the ball than Rice as well, so that's got to be taken into account. But do I want him to move for £100 million? Probably not, particularly if he goes to Man United. I think he'll be seen as like the saviour of Man United, and I think there are deeper problems than just central midfield at Man United. I don't think he fixes that. You know, he doesn't turn them into title contenders just with that one signing. So I think he is as close to a £100 million midfielder as we've got, but I don't want him to go for that amount of money, if that makes sense.
I agree. Sam, the story this week is that he's like going to be Conte's successor at Chelsea. They might even have to move Conte on in order to sort of afford Rice. I mean, it's, if you had to lose Conte, he's obviously been one of the iconic midfielders of the last, what, 5-8 years, whatever. Would you be happy of Rice as a replacement?
It's a sticky one, because I want him to stay for as long as he wants in it, because I love him as a player and just as a person in general. But I think Rice, he's obviously made it clear that he's obviously a Chelsea fan. He looked up to JT. That was his idol when he was younger. He obviously got released when he was 14 years old. So he's got that connection. Mason Mount's his best friend. So the links are there for the move to be made. I think he's not put in the air, but it's kind of clear that would be a move that he would like to happen. But at the same time, the only worry that I'd have is the fee. Like Doogie said, 100 mil signings haven't really worked out in the Premier League. We haven't really seen anyone like really kick on. Obviously, Jack Grealish was the most famous recent signing of that much, and he hasn't, even though he's got the quality and we know what he's capable of, he hasn't really kicked on. I understand it's the first season, but when you're going for that fee, there's an automatic pressure to perform straight away. Do you know what I mean? And I think with Declan Rice, even though he's done that at West Ham, it's almost, I wouldn't want to say he's been overperforming, because he's done it over a few seasons. But with the targets West Ham have, it's very different when you're at a club like Chelsea or Manchester United. The pressure is completely different. You see with Maguire as well. He left Leicester, who were challenging for those top four spots. As soon as he got into United and the limelight, the pressure's completely different. Do you know what I mean? So it will be a very interesting one. He's obviously a key player for the England setup. I think he's got 2 goals in 27 caps. He's a starter. Even when Henderson came back from injury, he was still starting, which was actually quite like a shock to quite a few fans. But I think he kind of made it clear why and how important he is to the side. So I think he's definitely going to improve, and he will be a great signing. But I just don't know if a team is, and I think that's why David Moyes is hell-bent on saying 100 mil plus, because he knows teams are going to be quite wary with that fee, because it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Just quickly, Sam, how do you feel about Chelsea's big money signing? How would you say Lukaku's sort of outdoing Grealish at the moment?
You know what, yeah, I think I'm not... He's going to be very critical of himself. Do you know what I mean? I can understand that when he came, there was a lot of expectation of him scoring week in, week out, and being a goal machine that we're used to him, what we're used to seeing. I just think it hasn't worked out as well as he wanted it to, and as well as the fans wanted it to. Obviously, we know that there was a few interviews and things said around how he's playing and the team playing around him, and obviously they kind of solved that. But I think that coming into a team like Chelsea, when we were so, first of all, we haven't been scoring as freely as we'd want to anyway, so I wouldn't solely blame it on him. I just think it's just not working out going forward for us at this point. I don't know. I don't necessarily know why. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. I don't know if it's because we keep on switching the players in and out around him or switching him. Obviously, we know when he had COVID, he was out for a few games. He had injuries as well. So I wouldn't say he's had the greatest season. I think that's quite clear. I don't think it's as bad as everyone is trying to make it seem. But like I said, when you come to a team for that much money, the limelight is going to be on you. Like, especially when you're known to be a goal scorer and you're just not scoring as many goals as you'd want to as well. So yeah, I don't think it's over. He's obviously got a 5-year contract, and I think that he's gonna get back to his way. I'm hoping he's going to get back to scoring goals, and hopefully the Club World Cup is going to give him that confidence. We see a few goals and leading us to the triumph, and then we come back and bag 15, man.
There you go. Listen, come on. Everyone at home saying Sam's biased towards Chelsea, just listen to those clips back. That was a
You set me up there. You set me up.
I did that question for you. Just quickly, dude, you back on Rice, because I had a look at the most expensive midfielders, sort of central midfielders ever. Pogba's sort of far and away on 94 million, obviously a bit of a different player to Rice. But if you look at the most expensive DMs according to Transfermarkt, I love the fact that Granit Xhaka is currently the fifth most expensive defensive central midfielder of all time on about £40.5 million. The most expensive being Rodri on £56.4 million, which I think most people would really agree with as a fee for him. You know, Frenkie de Jong, he's more box to box, 77 million. 1 year you might agree with that, 1 year you might not. I mean, where would you, if in a realistic world, where would you rate Rice in terms of like a transfer fee which would make sense for you?
Well, I don't think he's just a DM now, to be honest. He does everything. So I'm going to have to rank him against those most expensive midfielders. And I think, given his talent, age, as I said before, I mean, I won't go over the old ground. I think he's around 80, probably, to be honest. Yeah, I think he's comfortably, it makes sense for him to be the most expensive DM over Rodri ever. And I think Man United fans wish they probably hadn't spent 90 odd on Pogba. So I'd place him at 80. But I think he would be an excellent signing for both Chelsea and United. But I think it just makes more sense for him to go to Chelsea. They're a better team than United are right now. They've got a more structure around him. I just think there'd be less pressure on him in many ways. And they've got a much better manager and might well do in the summer as well. So, yeah, I'd go to United and £80 million would feel like a good deal all round.
Yeah, what do you think, Sam?
I'd agree. I think 70, 70, 80, like, I just, when you look at the defenders that have gone for that much, Rodri, Jorginho, Partey went for 45, Jorginho went for 51, and you see how crucial, except from Partey, because he hasn't done that much at Arsenal, but you can understand why he went for that fee for what he was doing at Atletico Madrid. But, like, even what we was talking about, the players that have gone in for the 90s and 95s, and even, for example, the 77 that Frankie de Jong went for, they haven't been as much of a success that you'd expect them to be, and it's always going to go back to that fee because of how much it is. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think because he's 23, he's got a contract until 2024. So I think 70 to 80, maybe 82 plus a player or something like that. Those type of deals there. But yeah, if he goes for 100, that would shock me. That would genuinely shock me.
I guess we'll never really know how good he is until he moves somewhere and has to go through the process which all of these aforementioned players are going through. But anyway, at home, let us know how much you would pay for Declan Rice if you could afford him. And I think that pretty much brings us to the end of our Extra Time podcast episode. Thank you both for joining me, my main men, both of you.
The main
men. the main crew. Doogie, if people can't get enough of the Football Daily content, where should they go next?
Well, stay on Football Daily. Don't have enough. Stay on it. Get excited for Saturday. Yes, on Saturday on Euro Football Daily, the Football Pyramid returns. It is season two, and we have a classic episode to kick things off. It's Obba versus Pat. So get excited for that. Big game. Saturday, it should be dropping at 10 a.m.
Big game.
All right, I wonder who won that. Sam, who?
don't be wondering.
No spoilers.
No spoilers at all. But I'm just going to let you know, I'm great at the Football Pyramid. That's what I'm going
to say. I hope one day to play you. All right, Sam, any Snapchat updates to bring us?
Just go to Snapchat. Like Doogie said, we're on every platform. Also TikTok as well, actually. We're releasing a lot more content over there. We've done a live for the transfer deadline. We're probably going to do a lot more stuff over there. So yeah, follow us up on TikTok, on Snapchat for anything that you don't necessarily see on our YouTube page. We're covering on those platforms. So yeah, hit us up.
Class. All right, I really enjoyed this. I hope everyone else did at home. If you did, give the video a like. We'd really appreciate that. Make sure you're subscribed to the Football Daily podcast channel. Join us again next week for another episode of Extra Time. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.